everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. And I am your host, Shane Told, just like every single episode. And I hope you're doing well on this fine Thursday afternoon. Yes, I'm getting the podcast out a little bit late this week. It seems to be happening a lot lately, and I guess it's because I'm somehow very busy all of a sudden. Like, at first, when this whole pandemic started, it was really weird. You know, our tour got postponed, and all of a sudden, I'm sitting here in this very office that I'm recording this, and like, it didn't feel right, you know? I felt like I was supposed to be somewhere else or doing something else, and at first, it was kind of a bit depressing, to be honest. But then you settle in, you get into a little bit of a routine. And then, I don't know, I just started saying yes to everything. I embraced my inner Jim Carrey. I became a yes man. Hey, you want to do guest vocals? Yes. Hey, you want to write a song for my fiance? Sure. How about you sing a Beatles song for my kid? Yeah, let's do that. Why not? Then it was, how about a new walkway? Maybe renovate a kitchen. Take out some studs that are water damaged in the house. You know, easy stuff. So I have been busy. It's been actually kind of good the last little while. I know some people emailed me with a little bit of concern, like, hey, are you doing okay? Because for a while there, I wasn't sure if I really was. But rest assured, I'm doing very well, staying very busy. And by the way, if you do want to email me, you can. It is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. I write back to many of them. And if you want to support the show, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. That is what helps keep the lights on around here. You can find all the info for that over at leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Which brings me to this week's guest, Mina of Life of Agony, a band that has been doing it for a very long time, like 30 years, and it was great to have her aboard on the podcast. Now, a bit of a disclaimer here first. We recorded this in like early to mid-March. I didn't record the exact date, but this was right when the coronavirus was kind of just starting. I mentioned that there's like 600 cases, and why I say it's a disclaimer is because we say some things afterwards that just prove how stupid we were, and probably many of you were as well. Just nobody saw this coming. Everyone underestimated this thing. I think I talk about how there's only 600 cases. People are changing their whole lives for this thing. It's like, yeah, you stupid idiot. Like, where was the foresight? But you know, hey, I can admit when I was wrong, and I was wrong, and I'm sure Mina would take back some things as well. But hey, I left it in just for a little bit of context and a little bit of hilarity, because, you know, it is just so crazy that when you look back to, you know, the pre-COVID days, how different it really was. Anyway, before we get into that, again, I just want to thank everybody so much for supporting this thing, for listening. We've got some great sponsors coming on board starting next week. I'm really excited about that. And I'm really excited about the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. So many great new members from all over the world, including Rhode Island. We got two. It's really great. So yeah, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. I know I just said it a minute ago, but shout out to all the members worldwide. Anyway, let's get into it, shall we? Here is my conversation with Mina Caputo of Life of Agony.
My podcast boy.
I'm your podcast boy. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Thank you for doing this. I'm fantastic.
Oh, this is the lead singer thingy, right?
This is the lead singer thingy, exactly. Lead singer syndrome. I'm Shane. Nice to meet you, sort of.
Hi, Shane.
So, thank you so much for doing this, first of all. You know, obviously, you've had a crazy career, so many ups and downs. So just to be able to talk to you and just, you know, I don't know, just kind of reflect back on the last, 35 years? It's the debut record. It's pretty crazy.
I know, I'm living it.
You're living it and you've lived it.
I've lived it, I'm living it. I will live some more.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, you know, like when I have someone like you on the show, because, you know, I talk to people from, you know, brand new bands sometimes, you know, but it's always hard when I talk to someone like you and I go, where do I start? You know, so the first thing I want to talk about is some of the music that you're making now. Two albums within like a 2-year span, which is for Life of Agony is rare after going 12 years without one. Talk to me about, you know, how you get in the studio now. Oh, sorry, the phone sounds crazy. You good?
Sorry, hang on.
No problem, sure.
My dog's stalking me for a bone. Hmm. Okay, baby girl. All right, hang on. Very demanding chihuahua I have. Sorry. Okay, you got your little cookies? Now you finish your rabbit. Okay. Well, if you're really paying attention to my life, I do about an album a year.
Right, of course.
I'm doing, you know, I've been scoring music for a film for almost the past 2 years. Let alone I just finished another solo record called The Moans. I haven't released it yet because I'm waiting for a respectful time to release it, because
sure.
the sound of Scars hasn't even been out 6 months, so
right.
Let's give it a little more respect. Obviously, you know, you can't, because we're still kind of like trying to build momentum without radio help, without kind of really, you know, money behind the band from the label, you know, as far as doing more stuff, because that's what it's all about, really. Let's be realistic. That's how you get on the radio.
Yep.
You know, that's how DJs are sucking bands' dicks, you know, fucking people are paying them. And it's pay to play, baby. That's the game. Your label ain't paying, you ain't getting playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just the fucking, the brutal, botched truth about our kind of... It's not even about the business of art anymore. It's the art of business. Even bands we've helped come up and that are now bigger than us, they completely like ignore the cry for help. Like, hey, remember us when you fucking were playing in front of 20 kids and you played 3 nights in a row at Irving Plaza because of us?
Right.
All right, now you're an arena band. Want to take us out on the road? You know, and it's just like, how many tickets are you worth? It's just like, whoa. Okay. You know, so it's very, even bands are very, it's like the art of business. It's just, that's like why, you know, like on my Twitter page, I'm not selling anything.
Right.
I'm not selling my music, really. I'm not selling merchandise. I'm not selling t-shirts. I'm not selling the fucking game. I'm just being myself, you know? Like, it's a false premise in our society. It's not about what you do, what you're accomplishing. It's about who you are, what you're contributing to the planet, to the people. And just so many people got it so fucking mixed up. I don't know. But anyway, if you, like I was saying before, come full circle, if you'll learn that I'm a big scatterbrain, so I jump from...
I love that, though. That's, I mean, okay. When we do these long-form things, it doesn't even... Like, sometimes I get off the phone with somebody, I'll be like, what did we talk about? And then when I go back and listen, I'm like, ah, it actually made sense. It was fine.
Yeah.
You know, your brain goes faster than your mouth sometimes.
So, yeah, full circle. I've pretty much been doing almost an album a year since, I mean... Very long time already, you know.
How is it different when you get back?
2012.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. How does it feel though when you get back in the studio with, you know, like Joey and these people that you've been making music with for such a long time, but then there's this, you know, hiatus where you, I don't know how much you were talking. I don't know how, you know, I don't know what happens when you get back in a room. Does it feel magical? Does it feel like the old days? Does it feel completely new?
Yeah. I mean, with Veronica in the band and the changes that we made, that's why we've already done two albums, you know, like the other guy didn't want to work. He wanted to see the demise of the band. He wanted to see the demise of his friends. And that's the brutal truth of things. And there was a lot of creative controversy, you know. And we just want to have fun. We just want to make great music. We want to be a band. We want to mimic the Doors. But, you know, we couldn't write any music together because that one really didn't even want to be in the room with us.
Right,
because he's better than everybody. I mean, just look at his tweets. Look at the stuff he focuses on. Go to his Facebook. Like, just check out the waste of time, space, and he's still talking about us.
Yeah, well, you're talking about Sal, your former drummer. For people that aren't aware, and yeah, he called you some pretty.
He went off on me only because he's just envious and he's hurt and. You know, listen, it's like, you know, it really, really kind of never really worked with him for all these years. I mean, we threw him out of the band after Ugly because he was out of control. Mm-hmm. Him and Joey would never really ever get along, fist fighting before we'd be out there, sold out show, 10,000 people in Berlin, Germany, and those two are fist fighting in backstage because, you know, some guy wants to be everyone's father, you know, and treat everyone the way his parents treated him. And like just very vicious control dramas and a lot of power struggling. It's just actually, I don't even know why I'm talking about it, but because I hate wasting my sure. energy on stuff like this. But you brought up the fact with hiatus and yep. why we haven't done a record in so long. And I'm not going to bullshit you. You know, that's why it's like, we just couldn't be in the same room together. We literally hated each other, you know, yeah, and it started just, you know, I mean, he didn't want to add new songs to a set list. He was killing the band slowly. No one really wanted to work with us. The label didn't want to deal with us, you know?
Yeah. No, it can be very toxic. I mean, for sure. I understand.
Oh, forget it. Like, you know, and we don't want that around. It's like there's enough challenges going on in the world. You know, you go to your band and your brothers and your mates because you're a pirate ship. But he didn't execute that philosophy. Sal just wants to be Pete.
Well, enter Veronica. You just talked about her joining the band. You know, another female presence. You know, along with mm-hmm. you and you know your transition. How has that been having her around? Has that been a really positive vibe within the band?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, there's like, I feel like there's the alignment within the four of us. There's a beautiful energetic flow. There's beautiful energies, beautiful vibrations, beautiful frequencies. Everyone's in the same room for the same reasons. And that's it, man.
Yeah.
We just want to have a great time. We want to take care of each other. We want to see all of our dreams being met, whether we're with each other or I'm doing something, you know, solo stuff or whatever. Or, you know, we all support one another. I mean, you know, Alan makes artwork for my albums and stuff. And, you know, Joey's heavily into producing, you know. Yeah. We basically wanted him. We were like, yo, why don't you produce the new Life of Agony record with Sylvia? You know, and because it's all new, it's all different, it's great, it's beautiful. You know, yeah. There's challenges, but that's life. You know, life in life, the universe is constantly throwing challenges at you and getting one up on you to challenge you, to allow you to grow.
Yeah. You worked with Sylvia Massey as well, another female. And, you know, there aren't a lot of female producers still to this day. It's still dominated, you know, by males, even though Sylvia has been doing it, you know, since, I mean, she worked on the first Tool record. I mean, you know, that's
Right.
Right. So, talk to me about working with her and, you know, another female in the room. I just wonder if this is something you're trying to do, for yourself
or just
because of the environment and because of the nature of how, you know, the rock world is.
When you become the change you want to see, the universe responds accordingly. So, you know, my entire life has been all about the divine feminine. And these are just things the universe is throwing us, good energy. You know, we've had enough of this, you know, gluttonous, toxic male energy. And, you know, when you make changes, when you face fears, when you dive into the unknown, you're rewarded. And these are just things that are just symbolically coming into our life. This isn't planned. This is just symbolism at its finest, and the universe teaching us and giving us what we are at the moment. We're very gentle people. We're very compassionate. We're not competitive. We don't play the game. We're doing our own thing, man. We've always done that. We've always tried to. We're trendsetting. We've always been.
Yeah.
But people want carbon copies. So that's why it's a bit challenging for a band like us to be like on top.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. So I want to talk about your early upbringing. If you don't mind, I know it's probably tough for you to speak about.
No, it's not.
Growing up in Brooklyn, New York, the story I heard was that your parents were drug addicts, your mom died at an early age, and you were raised by your grandparents who were very abusive, and it was just kind of hell for you until you could get out.
That's a story in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, if you care to elaborate... You know, I just picture, you know, a kid growing up in New York City in Brooklyn in the late 1980s. Like, that's just crazy. I think of a movie set, you know, there in that time because it's such an iconic time to be in that city.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a New Yorker, so I'm grateful out of billions of people that I was born in this city, but right. It's just another filthy city, and it ain't the same anymore. You know, they're stripping it from art and, you know, any erotica, anything that has true value, it's turning into, like, you know, it's fucking corporate hell in the streets. Everyone's a robot, you know. But there are some selective spots, obviously, that if you're a New Yorker, you know, and you have your little nooks and crannies and alleys that you go into and stuff, but... Yeah, New York is pretty much an iconic place, but a lot of places are, and it's just, you know, it's just another city, really. I mean,
well, I sort of disagree. I mean, I was just in New York City the other day, and it's still. I mean, you know, when you talk about just music community and what.
Well,
has
I'm
happened
from
there,
here. Where are you, you know, from?
I'm from Toronto,
Canada.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a big fucking difference between Toronto and New York City, dude. So you're gonna feel it. But when you're living in the streets and you're hustling in the streets every day,
right?
You know, it's just my streets, man. You know, it's my streets. It's the streets. You know, survival of the streets.
So how did it work exactly? So you were a kid and it was really hard for you, and then you got out and you lived on the streets?
I think it's hard for every fucking kid, you know? Like, it's hard for every child. It must be even harder for kids to grow up these days because people are just getting dumber and dumber. It's like, fucking, oh my God. No, I had a pretty childless childhood, you know? I'm making light of the whole thing because I'm a warrior. I'm gentle steel, you know, like I've been hardened by life, but I'm still a very compassionate human being. But yeah, you know, kind of sucked. It's still, I think that's why I think maybe I'm simmering in the divine feminine. I think my mother's soul went right into mine, and I'm living with the double, you know, the You know, I'm both. I'm both male and female, and I'm neither, and I'm not either. I'm a different energy. I'm a different frequency. I'm a different vibration. Human beings aren't just physical. We're housing our soul on this very low vibrational realm called the earthly plane. That's why we're in these bodies. But we're really, when you really think about it, we're light vibrating at such high speeds of light that matter's created. And we think we think everything around us is real and hard. And there's so much about the body, mind, soul, the origin of life, everything, the interval of life, the afterlife. We know nothing about right. anything as a species. Full circle. Yeah, my mother's soul went into mine, and that's what I'm trying to like convey here. Like,
totally. Well, you seem very spiritual. I mean, like, you're talking about the universe, and you're talking about, you know, you've thought a lot about this. You're not religious, I assume. You're just, this is kind of your own path and your own sort of belief system.
Religion is like, you know, the McDonald's. If you want a McDonald's version of God or the universe or the creator, then you can join the church or the temple or the fucking mosque or whatever, because that's all they're selling is fast food fear. But when you do, you know, I've been doing my research for over 30 years, and I'm very well read, and I'm big on theosophy and philosophy, and I read about this all the time, about the law of creation and manifestation, and I'm like constantly like reading books by Joseph Murphy and Neville Goddard and Alan Watts and Terence McKenna and Graham Hancock and Francis Crick, and you know, a lot of just The Secret Doctrine by Madame Blavatsky, a lot of theosophy, Nietzsche, Jung, Huxley. You know, I'm like years and years of just formulating my own ideas of who I am, because I don't live a day without saying, who am I? What am I? Where are we going? Why are we here? What's happening? What's the origin? Like, I'm like still looking, I'm still like dumbfounded that we're floating around on some fucking rock that's allowing life, you know, like, I'm just so blown away by the miracle of the mystery.
Right.
And that's how I live constantly. I'm not a one-dimensional human being. I'm not waiting online on Black Friday. You know, like pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, that's the collective culture. That's where they're at.
You're definitely different, and I want to get a little bit into Life of Agony stuff as well.
Okay.
Lyrically, I always thought Life of Agony had much better lyrics than the other bands of that era. They were much more emotional. They painted a stronger picture. Is that because you were doing, you know, so much more reading and so much more studying of this kind of stuff, kind of throughout your whole life?
It helps, you know. Also, Alan writes lyrics too for Life of Agony.
Okay.
He's brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
And I've learned the craft from him, actually. All those guys are older than me.
Right.
And I also still think we're still one of the best lyrical bands out there.
I agree. I would 100% agree.
Probably the best. One of the best, absolutely, literary bands out there. I vomit laughter, just not understanding certain bands, artists, and how they just listening to what they're singing about. It's just like, oh my God, like, Jesus Christ, I should just get into porn already.
Hey, Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, I mean, you mentioned that you're a bit younger than those than the other guys.
Only 2 or 3 years younger.
Yeah, yeah. But I also remember reading a long time ago that kind of when you got in the band, you were like, why am I in this band? I'm not even a lead singer. You know, and you kind of found your way as a singer, which is from doing this podcast. That's a very common thread that we all have. Hello.
Okay. Yeah, I'm listening. My dog's purring.
Yeah, I'm hearing the sound. I was wondering if that was you or the dog.
No, I'm glad it's not you. No. I purr, but I purr in a different way. She purrs in a doggy way. What did you say? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying about how, you know, you're a little bit younger, and that when you got in the band. And of course, when you're kids, like a couple years is a lot of years. You know what I mean? When you get to be in your 30s or 40s, what's 5 years? You know, but when you're younger, it matters. So my question was, it felt like from interviews and stuff, they kind of threw you into this lead singer role. Like, you're going to do it. And that you weren't really 100% comfortable with it at first.
No, I wasn't. I actually was... I wanted to go to Juilliard. I was playing classical music on piano. I had different kind of plans, but, you know, as all young punks, we were all getting together. And Joey was basically like, I want you to sing for the band. I'm like, dude, I can't. He was like, I don't care. Let's just do it. And then we were literally practicing in a garage with our first drummer. Probably in like 1987, 1986 maybe. Say yeah, 88 maybe. And it was really like really, really fucking old school punk rock kind of like New York garage days kind of shit, you know, where 30 of our crazy friends, we'd all be in the garage, everyone slamming in the garage into the, like we couldn't even play the music anymore. We were just, it started off like we really didn't intend to be the band that we were. We were just kind of doing it for fun in a way. And then after the first album dropped, it was Say Hello to Hollywood.
Exactly. Well, being from this kind of rough part of New York and these rough upbringings, how did you get your music out? Because at that time, you know, there's no internet. Or very primitive at least. How did you kind of get signed? Because that's such a big deal, well, you know, back in the 90s of that was like the dream, you know, every kid had. How did you get discovered?
Well, we were a very eclectic New York band, and we were doing something different that no one was even touching at the time. And that shit got around, for better or for worse. And after a few years of doing local gigs of like Lamore's and stuff, we suddenly, next thing we knew, we were doing 3 nights in a row at Lamore. Mm-hmm. And then in Staten Island and then in the whole tri-state area, there wasn't a place that this band could go that could fill in 2,000-3,000 people every night.
Wow.
Word got around, and we had the same management as Type O at the time.
Yeah.
And the manager took our demo and brought the A&R guy to the Life of Agony show just to be like, you got to fucking see what's going on here with this band. And basically, actually, we were turned down because the A&R guy threw me in the Glenn Danzig arena.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, no, he sounds like Glenn Danzig. I don't like it. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And, you know, most A&R guys don't know what they're talking about anyway. So I think he signed us not by force, but by believing in the intuition of other people.
Right.
And so, like, boom, we got in. And, you know, next thing you knew, we were just, I think 2-3 years later in Europe, and may even more in Europe, we were fucking tremendous. And we were headlining, like, the Dynamo Festival. And at that time, we were pulling in 100,000 people coming to see us, literally. Like, it was, like, a time to remember. There's footage online. There's, like,
yeah.
It's, like, insane. I think it was 1993, the first time we hit Europe. And we were fucking, like, it was, like, mega stardom back then.
I remember. I mean, it's crazy to think of just these kids in on the streets in New York, like you talk about, you know, in this sort of bubble, to all of a sudden be out in, you know, somewhere like Europe. I mean, that must have been a big culture shock for you, especially at that time.
No, it wasn't, dude. You have to understand that fucking New York City, you know, back then, you know, there was punk rockers on the corner, kids with mohawks, there was transsexuals on the next corner. Mm-hmm. There was fucking thugs and gangbangers on the next corner. There's no surprises. And, you know, like, everywhere else seems to be a little bit more duller coming from New York.
Okay, yeah.
In a sense, you know what I mean? Like, I'm used to the city, so I can kind of, like, downplay it a bit. But, like, when I travel around the world, it takes a really special city to be like, whoa. Because I've lived all over. Like, I've lived in Berlin.
Yeah.
I've lived in Amsterdam 6 years on and off. And Amsterdam is another favorable city of mine. I love Amsterdam very much because of its it used to be more open. Now things are getting politically heated everywhere. And, you know, it seems like they're trying to cage us all as much as they can. But, yeah, like, you know, there's really no real culture shock. I mean, well, I guess going into different cities and learning, yeah, I mean, it was a bit, obviously it was foreign in the beginning, but, you know, 20-something years into traveling, like, I'm so used to hearing the German language and sweet. Sure, like, I can, sure. When people are in New York City and I hear them talking a European language, I'm like, wait, I stopped them. I'm like, let me guess. You're from Czechoslovakia, you know, and it's like, you're from France. Yes. How do you know? Yeah, I could tell from your accent.
Right.
You know, because I can hear
sure
certain cultures, like if a French person's talking in English or if a Dutch person is talking in English, I know how they sound just by the years of, yeah. So I can like spot people out in New York.
No, but absolutely. But in 1993, you know, that wasn't happening. So I just think of the punks leave New York City and they go, you know what I mean? Like, what is going on? Like, I feel like there's got to be some stories there.
Oh, yeah, of course there is. Like, for example, the first time I think the band went to France, and this was in the very early 90s, you know, we go into the venue and we're looking for the toilets. There's no fucking toilets. There's a hole in the ground in the bathroom.
Right.
So you're basically just squatting and shitting in a hole. And we will, and like, you know, those are kind of like some of the cultural things. We were like, what the fuck? So like, we were all taking shits, but like deliberately missing the hole and shit. And just, we were totally fucking crazy, dude. We were stupid. We would do stupid shit. We still do, but you know, we're a bit more smarter because, you know, we could get fucking locked up and then forget about it. I'll become fucking dead meat for all the they'll probably lock me up in a man's cell. Who knows, you know, because you know the way the prison systems are. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
About my, you know, my consciousness or my well-being. They don't care.
No. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, you came out as you like to use the word transsexual in 2011.
I do. Even though the LGBT community frowns upon that word now.
Yeah. Well, it's whatever you prefer. So that's why I said
don't care
it.
About any.
But you know, these days people are much more
open-minded and supportive than they would have been, safe to say, in the late 90s. Because I think of the music scene and the metal scene being very macho and very, not open-minded.
You know what?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. It kind of still is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised.
There are times when I kind of feel the transphobia.
Yeah.
But that might be my own paranoia.
Probably you know, a little bit of both. I mean,
like for example, like yeah. when I wasn't out and I was living as a white male, privileged white male or whatever, like certain DJs would be playing us all the time. And these same DJs, now that I've been out, don't even fucking go near the music. Mm. So there's, I would love to fucking name some DJs, man, but my band will get angry at me. So I will just not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, either they're going to stop. Either they're gonna start playing you, or they're gonna still not play you. So I don't know. I don't really know.
But like I said, I can be totally wrong.
Right.
It could just be that they don't like the music. You know, because they're one of those. You know, they're one of those people. They like River Runs Red, and they don't want anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, radio's a weird place too. I mean. The amount of times I've been listening to the radio and they've said, like, pick a band, like the Foo Fighters. They'll be like, hey, the Foo Fighters, they have a new record dropping this week. And then they play the old song. They play the song from 1995. And you're like,
I know.
You just said they have a new record. Why aren't you playing the song from the new record? You're playing Everlong or whatever. I never understand that about radio.
It's like not what radio. It's like this human foolish nostalgia.
Right.
It's like what people don't understand is like that same band that you're making, you're breaking, basically, all because of your attitude of non-openness, you know?
Yeah.
When I'm – like I'm different. Like when I love a band, I'm fucking all in and I welcome all the changes. Like, everyone's going on and on and on about Stone Temple Pilots. Honestly, the first album they did with Jeff Gutt is one of my favorite Stone Temple Pilot records. Right. It is absolutely unfucking believable. Unbelievable. I think Jeff Gutt channeled all the good things from Scott. The songwriting's fucking amazing. Jeff sounds amazing. Like, and people, you know, people are just super, super. Everyone's a keyboard warrior. Yeah. People are extremely cruel. And it's like, when I love a band, I'm fucking all in, man. I've got every Zeppelin record. I've got every Robert Plant solo record. I've got all of his side projects. Like,
yeah.
Same for Queen and Freddie Mercury. Like, I'm
well,
just
I love
like,
that.
Yeah. I mean, like, what Radiohead, too. Big fan. You know, they're. Who knows what the fuck they're going to do for the next record? Who cares? Grow, you know,
sure.
Grow with them. Like, who wants the same fucking record every record? That these kids, they want something that doesn't even exist. They're yearning for something that could actually never happen. Yeah. You ever meet one of those? Oh, fuck that. I just love Stone Temple Pilots' core. The rest of it is just fucking complete garbage. Meanwhile, he hasn't even listened to any of it. He's just...
Right.
You know, just, you know, holds on for dear life, that music and those memories, because life right now for me sucks and I can't move on. It's like, yeah, and what I mean by this is like this, it's sometimes it's hurtful to be competing against your own music.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
And I experience that a lot. Like,
yeah.
I think I write my solo music. I think I write incredibly brilliant fucking music that should be all over the world, man. And it just – I don't want to tell that story, but there's that butt again. it's like, I just, even with Life of Agony, there's a part of me that I just feel like just so underrated. It's like, damn, man, like, you know, and you just want your music to globally heal the world, or at least be given a fair chance to. Well,
for sure. I mean, the amount of roadblocks that are put up, you know, these days, it's people want to say, oh, it's so easy to get your music out there because of the internet, and but there's just so much out there, and they're still controlling what's put to the media. I mean, you know, constantly.
No, there's absolutely control. Absolutely, man.
You washing your hands?
No,
that,
I...
That coronavirus, you got to be careful.
No, I washed the baby's dog bowl. I just threw some water in there. No, got it off the floor. Yeah, no. And yeah, that, again, too, that fucking fear and the panic is just fucking comical.
Yeah, I'm on your side on that one, too. I don't know. What are they up to today? Like 600 cases in the States? It's like...
And people, I don't know, but...
People are changing their whole lives over it.
They're spending fucking billions on advertising to keep people afraid.
Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting chess game, politics, you know, and all the institutions that are set into place for humanity. I find it fucking extremely comical that, you know, there's this constant argument online, you know, with, you know, putting presidents into place and all this stuff. Like, nothing will change unless the war paradigm changes. Doesn't matter who we vote in. It's going to be business as usual if there's a war paradigm.
Right.
We brutalize everything on the planet. We brutalize each other. We brutalize the land, sea, air, sky. We polluted space. We pollute the waters. We fucking poison our foods. We kill our kids. I mean, look how this patriarchy is just brutalizing life as we know it. They don't want us happy and healthy and stress-free. They want the exact opposite. That's why they spend billions on advertising and this is what this is. The coronavirus, first of all, it's not even the coronavirus. It's a strain. The coronavirus has been existing already since last year. They didn't even tell people. So obviously they want people sick. And you know what? The cure is out there already. They got the cure. They're just waiting and waiting and waiting. And whoever releases that cure is going to be a fucking quadrillionaire. You'll see. And you'll see how everyone's going to get these bad vaccination shots that just... You know, that just, it's like they're trying to turn people into human pigs or some shit, man. It's like, I make a laugh funny about it, but, you know, it's a very cryptic, a lot of cryptic people out there with cryptic agendas. And, you know, people need to, like, dig, man, and stop looking at shit at face value.
Yeah.
Because what's going on is not what's really going on.
Yeah, well.
You got to be smart enough to unplug out of the matrix and peel the layers of the hologram and look through it, man. You know, like, got to dive into the rabbit hole and dig deep. And that's why self-love, self-care is very important. That's why being very conscious of the information that comes into your life is very important. Self-talk is very, very important. How do you talk to yourself? It's very important. Your cells hear you. Your cellular structure is directed by every little thought you have, every emotion that's behind your thought. Your cellular system is growing in that direction. And that's how they program people. That's how the game is played. That's why pop culture is so fucking mindless. They're programmed into fear. Look at everyone's panic. I mean, yeah, I'm sure some people got sick, but the common cold kills more people. Heart disease kills more people. Stress kills more people. Drink driving kills more people. Where's the outrage?
Yeah.
Where's the billions in advertising to stop drunk, to stop selling alcohol? Alcohol, red meat, sugar, tobacco. How's that fucking patriarchy doing for you people? It's like the meat, tobacco, and sugar culture is what it is. Doesn't look like it's doing too good. Looks like it's self-imploding as we know it. Or there's a divine plan, which I like to think that is beyond the physical realm and what we see and experience here. All this chaos and stuff, I do believe there's order in it.
Okay.
You have to be wise enough to see that. Some people think I'm insane, but there's divine. I mean, when you understand the bloodstream of the human body, it's completely chaotic. All your blood cells are fighting all these viruses to keep you healthy at all times, every day, every every breath that you take. Your immune system, your blood is trying to fight virus. It's very, if you can look into the bloodstream, you'd see looks like a nuclear war going on constantly. Right. And that's what's going on the planet. She's a living organism. We're a part of that. But again, years, hundreds of years of bad programming, humanity's focused all on the wrong things, you know?
Yeah.
It's more about money and consumerism and agriculture and trade and power. And it's just, you know, it's we've lost our way, I believe. But I do believe we can find our way back. But I don't know, really. I don't know. You know, I'm also, too, navigating in my life and trying to figure out what's right, what's wrong. Is there anything right or wrong? Who knows? I don't know. We know nothing. You know, we don't.
The more you learn, the less you seem to know. That's
absolutely.
That's one thing that someone said to me a long time ago, and it's always stuck with me. You know, you read a book subject, and then you realize there's 50 other books on that subject, and you're still a novice. You don't know shit. But before that, you knew even less than nothing. So you have to know that you know less than nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah. The reason why I have about 2,500 books in my library, because I'll be reading a book on philosophy, and this philosopher's quoting philosophers that his father quoted, and it's just the lineage of mind and soul is just infinite.
Do you have a book you'd recommend for people to read? Like, if I mean, you have a huge library, but just one or two books that everyone should read?
Yes. It's a book I buy for everyone all the time just to get them started. And it's called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy.
Okay. The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy. I'll repeat that for people.
Yeah.
What is that book? Is that kind of about like willpower and about you know, the ability to kind of make anything happen just by, you know, work?
In a nutshell, it's like basically your subconscious mind is a fancy word for your heart or your intuition or your imagination. These are people that have imaginatively and obviously there's evidences of law of attractions and stuff like that, which they're powerful roadmaps to becoming who you really want to be as a person, whether you're a janitor or whether you're a lawyer or whether you're a Buddha. It's about programming your own heart and mind. We've all been programmed as children. Dreams crushed, you know. These kinds of authors and writers basically give people the opportunity and the scientific laws on how to manifest the life that you truly, truly desire.
Right.
How to manifest the lover that you truly desire, how to bring things and people and abundance into your life now. It's about all. Again, like I mentioned before, how you talk to yourself. That's how you either propel yourself or you're hurting yourself. If you're constantly berating and you're hard on yourself and you're no good and I never get a girlfriend, I never get a boy, guys hate me, girls. But guess what? You know, whether you want it or you don't want it, your word is your wand.
Right.
And it's so simple that people think it's just a bunch of hogwash, but it truly, truly isn't. I mean, and so like for years and years and years, I've spent so much time like, you know, he's got a book called The Cosmic Power Within You, The Cosmic Energizer. Within you is the power. He's written over 277 books. Yeah. He's like a Marcus Aurelius, you know, like a Plato in a sense, but from 1910 and just on how to live more buoyant, how to live more healthy, how to become more aware, how to love yourself more, how to heal yourself, how to talk yourself into situations, how to be fearless, how to manifest divine abundance into your life, divine joy. It's beyond, you know, it teaches you how to really pray. You pray as if it already happened. You don't pray with fear and desperation behind your body the way church and state teaches you.
Right.
That's the wrong way to pray. You pray like the Indian prays for the rain. He already thanked the gods for the rain. That's why it rained a few hours later. He knew, he believed. And this is a human power. This is a human potential. This is like the psycho-cybernetics of your mind. It's about achieving, you know, what you want, having the power, believing in yourself where everyone else around you, you know, especially in my life, you know.
Absolutely.
A lot of people telling me, I can't do this, you can't do that, don't do this, you can't do that, you can't. It's like, I'm doing everything you said I couldn't.
Exactly.
And I'm planning to do more. Yeah. So like people like him are just very, very, very special human beings.
Yeah.
They're almost like my modern day Christs without selling the bullshit, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it's really, really, really special material. And I highly recommend it.
Cool. I'll check it out as well. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, I got to go anyway.
Yeah, you do have some tour dates coming up. I just want to plug real quick. You're going back out on the road. Are you excited for that? Should be fun.
Yeah. Friday. We start Friday.
Yeah, great. So go see Life of Agony, everybody, and check out me and his solo records and everything else. Can I play a tune for the people?
Absolutely.
Can be anything you want, from your solo work to Life of Agony, whatever you want.
Ooh. Hmm. You have all my records?
I can probably get them.
You know what? Let's play, since I'm going out with the boys, let's play a Life of Agony song. Let's do play I Surrender for us, unless you can, because it's too long.
No, I'll but play it. Oh, I love it. I love long. Give me long. I'll play it.
Okay.
I Surrender.
Play I Surrender off the new album.
All right. It's done. Mina, thank you so much.
Thank you, darling.
All right. Have a
Bye.
Great day. Yep. See ya.
You too.
Bye now. So there it is with Mina. And yes, quite the conversation we had. And yes, once again, that coronavirus talk is pretty hilarious now. Yeah, we were way off. We were very wrong, and I apologize for my words and probably some of my actions back in those days too, because, man, like, no one saw this coming, and if you did, you are a smarter person than I. Anyway, thank you so much again for tuning in. We've got a great episode coming at you next week, and the week after that, and the week after that. So make sure that you are subscribed. Hit that subscribe button. And of course, if you want to
get in touch with me, you can. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. Check out the All Access Club. And I will leave you with a tune. Here is a newer one from Life of Agony, I Surrender, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
In this room.
There's no faith and there's no truth and there's no faith.